Hey.
Yo, what's up?
Hey, buddy.
Hey, can you hear me now?
Yep.
Roger that. All right. What up, what up, what up? It's your boy, Shabby. We're on another edition of Growing Weed is for Dummies. And we got Dylan here with us. How you doing, man?
I'm pretty good. Just sitting in my grow right now.
Awesome. We're actually doing a Corona freaking friendly podcast today because it's not in person. We're actually talking from state to state through the Anchor app, and so I hope our connection's good. If not, our last segments have been saved.
Okay. Well, I know you're there. You just got a lot better sounding, but for a little bit there, I was hearing the car noise.
Gotcha. Well,
Yeah.
I'll try to keep the mic close. And actually, some of my listeners are probably pretty used to that now because I do most of my podcasts out of my car.
Yeah, no, it sounds better than when you first started, so.
All right, cool, man. Shit. So recreational just hit in Arizona.
Yeah,
That's
so
amazing, bro.
two up here in Flagstaff, several up down in Tucson, several down in Phoenix and in Tucson. 73 licenses in total were approved today.
Oh yeah? Wow.
So,
What?
yep.
That's crazy. Because I seen pictures of Mint dispensary having people in there.
Yep.
A lot of people were posting different things about it.
Yep, I'm excited because on my I'm just loving the fact that everyone can buy, everyone can grow. Because I mean, I love Washington, and I love the fact that I can buy there, and they have fantastic brands like Fat Panda. But
Well,
there's no grow rights in that state, so
oh.
the big thing here is the grow rights combined with the right to buy from the store. I mean, both
Oh,
of
damn, I didn't know that.
Yeah, having both of
That's
those
crazy.
things is the real deal. Gotta love Arizona for that.
Dylan's actually a guy I had first met very early in, don't know, 8 years ago probably. When I first met you at a dispensary, and you were selling some herb to me, I was going around to different dispensaries, and that's when we first met. But years later, we reconnected, and we actually worked together in a grow facility slash kitchen operation. So that's kind of Dylan's background from what I know. If you'd like to add anything to that, please do.
I'm currently working as an assistant cultivator at High Mountain Health up in Flagstaff, for the propagation department, which that's clones and moms. So, yeah, I'm glad that now more people can enjoy the experience that is growing your own cannabis. So.
So where I've been seeing you posting a lot of pictures. Has that been from your own grow or from what's that from?
Yeah,
Interested.
those are new and old pictures and videos from my grows,
Oh, okay.
and my fingerprints got delayed. I had to redo them, so hopefully next Monday or Tuesday I'm gonna be starting as the at the cultivator position at High Mountain.
Nah. All right.
But as of now, yeah, I mean, I'm sitting in my tent with my ladies right now. Have a few different strains rocking and rolling. Have a indica grape ape is what it's looking like. It was seeds from Prime Leaf. And then I also got a strain that I picked up from my buddy down in Prescott, Arizona. It's called Bonesaw, and that's from Swamp Boys Genetics. They're a breeder down at located out in Florida. So got a
Dude,
few.
I can't wait to get to the all the stupid science things that we're gonna get into as soon as we get fuck the strain. Playing with the strain is what it's gonna be huge for people who are growers like us, you know?
Oh yeah, I'm glad that I at least have something decent to start with. Several different phenos from seeds that I popped, and then like I said, I picked up this one Bonesaw pheno, which is a Fire OG Kush crossed with the white. So that is a pretty decent cross. So I'm hoping for some good results from that pheno.
Yeah, I'm looking for some old stuff I used to have, actually, when I get about it. Dude, I seen in Tucson, actually, just so people who are listening to this podcast know, there's no actual theme to this podcast. We're just shooting the shits. So stay tuned and enjoy. But I seen somebody in Tucson who was actually selling seeds on the side of the road.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, he had his own little shade up with the back of his truck and a little banner up, and on the banner it said seeds for sale, and at each end it had a marijuana leaf on it.
That's funny. That's funny. I do have plants and clones that are also available for purchase in the Flagstaff area. So
yeah, me as well. I'm gonna definitely be into the clone game. I'm gonna be doing a lot of clones for the best genetics that I could give without letting anything like Larry or Chronic Thunder out, you know, the best of the just for me. But I'm definitely going to be pushing out the other genetics. Some of the better genetics, I'm actually, that's the strain game I was talking about that I want to play is like trademarking or selling or having the cap on a strain that somebody else, you know, the rest of the market doesn't have. I think that's going to be a big interest. Like trading cards, you know, like basketball cards or baseball cards. And you know, you just want that Sammy Sosa or something, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, you know, that's why I'm making clones available. I already have clones in small plants available for purchase. So, and all of the plants that I have for sale are already on their first topping. Most of my vegging plants are on their second or third topping, so I'm getting, you know, multiple bud sites on a lot of my plants right now.
What do you think the going rate for clones are?
It's generally about $20 to $25.
A clone?
Then yeah, and then about $30 to $40 for a sister.
All right.
Cool. That's generally what most people charge.
What do you think the going rate for seeds is? Because the person we sold, remember the person we sold that stuff to, the grow operation stuff to?
Yeah.
She's the one who seen that place for sale on the side of the road. She stopped there and bought some seeds.
Nice. That's funny.
Yeah, so I was just wondering what you would say the going rate. What do you think he sold? Because it looked like packs of five, and it was like a dime bag little thing that he put them in, and it was like five seed packs.
Well, I mean, you know, people are selling them for anywhere from 10 for five for anywhere to 100 for five. It really depends the genetics. If it's from some guy on the side of the road, I wouldn't pay much for him because, especially in Tucson, there's a good chance that those seeds are Mersch, commercial, Mexican.
Yeah, they're just getting them from the Mexican commercial stuff that they have, putting them in a bag and calling them whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you could buy $20 of that Mexican weed and get 100 seeds, and then if you're selling them for $10 for five, I mean, shit. You know what I mean? That's a game that someone's definitely playing down there, so...
I wouldn't buy them off the side of the road, but people like us who have been in the industry for decades, we have legit seeds. And I've got plenty of seeds. You've got plenty of seeds, and they're actually legit. I found mine to be 95% feminized.
Yeah, I mean, all the ones that I'm popping have been feminized. And then there's the hormone you can buy to feminize your own seeds anyway if you want 100% success rate.
Yeah, I from the last 20 or more that I've planted, I've only had one male come up, so
yeah.
I've had a really good, really good rate.
Yeah, and I mean, the genetics that I am popping are already looking good. No way to know for sure until I run them, but
yeah.
Like I said, Bone Saw is from Swamp Boys Genetics, which is a decent breeder down in Florida. These other plants are genetics from Prime Leaf Dispensary in Tucson, Arizona. I'm pretty damn sure at least three of these plants are Grape Ape. because of how they look. Multiple bud sites, after they responded well to a few toppings. I'm going to have several main colas on each plant. And that, those are also the same for the plants that I have for sale as well. So,
so what are you growing in right now? What would your medium be?
So I'm in a 4x4 tent and a 2x2 tent, and I'm growing in bags with, a kind of a super soil. Not entirely quite a super soil, but, pretty damn close. It's a Fox Farm soil mixture with some added worm castings, some added compost, and then, a variety of nutrients that I've grown to like over the years.
Gotcha. And do you do like a nutrient regimen on a weekly basis, or what?
Yeah.
Just pure water? What's the haps?
I do. I alternate the nutrients that I use, and it's I do have a regimen. I know it now by head, by been doing it so long now at this point, but it's pretty much that I alternate, you know. I have a
Is it just raw nutrients, or is it like a bot and
so part A, part B from Cultivation Nation Fox Farm, which is their salt line. It's like a combined already mixed line of salts.
Uh-huh.
And it's a part A, part B. There's a veggie and a bloom.
Yep.
You have to be pretty light on that stuff, at least at first, and work your way up. Obviously pHing the water to 5.5 to 5.7 in veg right now. When they switch to bloom, that's going to be going up to 6.2. But right now I'm doing
you
that.
You want to build that shit up.
I'm doing that once a week, the veggie, at a half dose. Plants are responding well to that. Also doing what's from the homegrown blend, the Big Bloom. I like their stuff. You can feed that through most of the plant phases. It has a high nitrogen level, so it's very beneficial during veg. Then I'm also adding a beneficial bacteria and fungi mix that has an added kelp mixture, as well as just a raw kelp tea. And all of those are being fed once a week. And that's to encourage a more natural, more healthy soil ecosystem. The natural bacteria and the natural fungus will work in a symbiosis with the roots. That'll help the roots pick up more potassium and more phosphorus. And the kelp has some phosphorus in it in itself. But
uh-huh.
And a few other micronutrients, but the main thing that the kelp gives you is you're feeding the bacteria and the fungi. So kind of basically have two normal nutrients, the homegrown being an organic derived from human waste, actually cooked human waste, but human waste. The Fox Farm Cultivation Nation part A and part B, those are fully synthetic. The plant can absorb them very well, but you want to start low on those. And then, like I said, the beneficial fungi and bacteria, as well as the kelp feeding, all of those about once a week with a water break in between once a week as well.
Yeah, a good flush.
Yeah, I don't even fully flush them out, because with a super soil, you actually don't want to flush them out. You kind of want to hold your.
Uh-huh.
You kind of want to hold your. You don't want to have too much of a salt buildup, so you do want to have a little bit of water runoff. But if you have too much water runoff, you're actually going to be kind of ruining the super soil you worked so hard on.
Gotcha.
Unlike, you know, grow cubes, you actually want a 100% runoff type of a deal. This, you probably want more of like a 30% runoff type of a deal, because you don't want a salt buildup still, but you at the same time don't want to get rid of all those precious nutrients that are stored in your soil.
Yeah, I hear you.
So I've been having fun with my soil. I'm sure you can tell from my little rant right there.
Dude, you just hit people with a bunch of stuff. They'll probably have to rewind that back a couple times to hear all the names of things you threw out. That was really good. I appreciate it.
It's good to have
people with knowledge and a good background to, you know, a good basis of knowledge like you've been doing.
One thing I can tell people at home.
Sodas. You know, you've been doing grow ops, you've been doing dispensaries, you've been doing working with the patients, you've been doing so much in the industry that you know, an overwhelming amount of knowledge has cured itself in this person.
Well, I mean, I don't know about that. I just, I really like doing it, and it's,
You went on a 5-minute rant about some shit. So
what I will say to anyone that is interested at home with some soil, like soil ecosystem and just soil health, I should say, it's pretty easy. You know, if you introduce the bacteria and you introduce something for them to feed on, some people do use molasses. I think that introduces a little bit. It's a little too tempting for bugs, but I might use a little bit of molasses in a later stage, because I also believe that just feeding the bacteria at that point will help your resin production. So, but one thing that's real nice, the reason why I wanted to mention it, is if you do have those right bacteria and fungi in your soil and you're feeding them, they'll actually not only help out your roots, but they'll help you out by keeping your soil pH balanced. And that is fantastic, because then the only thing you need to worry about is your water pH. And I mean, at that point, it really is growing weed for dummies.
Yeah. What do you think about throwing some guano at the bottom of your basket?
So yeah, you can use guano as your, you know, I would always use like a 20%, cause that is a really,
cause I didn't hear that. I didn't hear you say that, or I might've missed it.
So, I used worm castings in place, a 20% worm casting. I would suggest doing no more than 20% of something like that though, because then you're going to literally burn your plants. You're going to give way too much, like at one point. But if you do like a 20% guano mixture or a 20% worm casting, I find that they both work fantastically.
Gotcha.
If you want to do a 10%, like a 10 and 10 and mix them, that is also, you know, fantastic as well. So people all have their own,
go ahead.
People have their own preference with all that, but I feel they both work pretty adequately.
Yeah, because I have nothing to add to the soil conversation. So it's really a breath of fresh air for a lot of people who have been listening to me for a year to finally be like, oh, finally somebody who could help me out in some way.
Well, I mean, so, you know,
because like I don't have much, you know, to add. I have some things to add, but it's like what you added is like a whole year's worth of knowledge compared to what I've been able to give anybody who's like, not growing in that type of medium.
Well, I mean, I'd love to, if we talk and I have a little bit more time to prepare, next time we can go through a whole super soil lesson, if you like.
Oh shit, yeah. Yeah, dude, anytime. We could just pop this up now that we know how easy it is. We could always just throw this thing up real quick and do a quick 15 minute segment just to give value to the people, you know, across the world that are listening. I looked at the country list yesterday at how many countries are listening. It's about 30 to 40 different countries in the world. That's it's crazy. I couldn't believe it.
See, I'd love to give that knowledge to them too, because I mean, making a simple simple super soil is something that's very beneficial to a lot of people's grows. And you can look up
in
a
certain
recipe,
areas for sure.
Well, you can look up a recipe online, and that's fine. But if you learn about actually what's happening, then you can truly make your own. You know, you do a carbon layer, which can be, you know, something like cocoa coir, can be a lot of different things. You do your carbon layer, you do a layer of compost, do a layer of 20% worm casting, you know.
You were talking about, I want to go back to you, the rant you went on. You were talking about reading your plant. Because you, when you were talking about certain things you were doing in your plant, you said the plant was reacting really well. I would like to touch base on that for the people who are listening. How do you read your plant? How would you, per se, when you look at your plant? I know, you know, going by the leaves is a big factor, but I want to hear it from you.
Coloration, leaves. But one thing is just literally node spacing. That's a huge one. As I said earlier, my top.
Can you? People might not know what that is. Can you describe that a little bit?
So nodes are going to be your bud sites or your sites where you're going to get new growth. And so, for example, with the plant that I picked up from Prescott, Arizona, The bone saw genetics, it's one reason I say it's responding well is its nodes are now starting to get more compact, whereas the grower that had it before had it under some very weak Amazon, and nothing wrong with Amazon lights. I use some Amazon lights myself, but you got to be careful which ones you get. You got some very, very weak ones, and it caused a lot of stretching. The node spacing, I would say, is about 4 inches between node. Nothing necessarily wrong with that. It's just that you're going to get a lot less out of your plant for your space. Whereas the plant's right next to it, it's about a quarter inch, half an inch until a new node starts. And
yeah, so it's got more buds, more likely bud formation.
Exactly. So if I were to count the potential bud sites, like I'm not planning on flipping these girls into bloom right now, but if I were to, the strain that I picked up last week from the buddy, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 bud sites. The plant right next to it, which is definitely about 2 weeks younger. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. So what's that? Three times more bud sites just because it got topped one more time. And
yes, that's 300% production in likelihood.
Exactly.
Like the difference between getting an ounce off a plant and damn near a quarter pound.
Exactly.
Yeah, like in relative speak for people who understand those types of language.
Exactly.
That's exactly what it is.
So having a great light source is just something that's your number one factor with node spacing, and then giving them the nutrients the plant needs to thrive under that light source. That's why I'd rather people get one really good light and have one or two really good plants than 10 really cheap lights and have 4 really bad plants. You know, it really is. It's tempting to go for like the cheapies, and you can find some deals. You know, I got some adjustable spectrum LEDs that were fairly inexpensive, under $100. You know, and they work great. The plants are responding well.
I bought a 400 watt, and you could switch it from high pressure sodium to metal halide. And so you can use it in the veg and in the flowering
stage.
That's
good.
Yeah, and I picked that one up for $100, you know? Like, that's pretty good.
No, that is good. And now I've become a full LED guy because of these adjustable spectrums. Because right now I have it favoring the blue percentage, but I still have enough red percentage to invoke a little bit of stretching, but not much. If you have too much red, if you have too much red spectrum in the veg stage, you'll invoke way too much stretching. And then vice versa, you want more red, less blue in the bloom stage. But some growers at the end actually will increase their blue at the end, because even though it will promote a less extensive harvest, it'll promote more trichome growth. So there's a lot of cool things you can do with LEDs. You can, you know, literally choose, do I want a bigger harvest or more rich terpene and more rich oils? So maybe if you're an extractor, for example, you'd say, I'm going to throw my blue up a little bit, stress out the plant, give it a little bit more oil production. Whereas someone like it's a smoker might say, hey, I'm going to turn up my red spectrum so I get a bigger harvest at the during bloom. It's interesting. LEDs are very fun for that reason. You can, very customize what you're doing with them.
Shit. Well, I actually picked one up not too long ago. I decided to try them out. I can't say whether I'm impressed or not impressed. Yeah, I haven't spent enough time with it. But
the only ones that are the adjustable ones.
Mine's not adjustable mine's not adjustable, but I did pick it up from a quality source. You know, it wasn't like internet. It was a local place. But
I have one non-adjustable one right next to my adjustable ones as supplemental, and it provides white and red light, and so it's a great supplemental light. But as far as the main LEDs that are adjustable, it provides white, yellow, UV, UVB, blue, red, you name it, white, it provides all of the light spectrums that you really need. So, and the fact that you can adjust them with little knobs, it's a game changer. It's something that growers never were able to do in the past. Even with your high pressure sodium, people,
you there was different bulbs you could buy. Exactly, but that was the limit. Yep. Yeah, that was the limit.
And then the thing is, like, people were saying, like, for example, UV is really good at endorsing really bright colors and more flavonoids and terpenes and trichomes, and that UV spectrum is actually filtered out from the glass in the bulb on high pressure sodium. So that could also be another argued benefit of LEDs. But again, you have to buy a pretty quality LED that with the adjustable. Not that there's nothing, there is some that aren't adjustable that are good, but they're generally only going to be good for either veg or bloom. They're not generally going to be good for both, the ones that you can't adjust. But
yeah, that's, I just got mine for veg. That's basically the only reason I got it for. I was being a dumbass. I shouldn't even got it.
Does it have a lot of blue?
I don't even know. I try not to look at it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. I'll use it or I'll sell it, one or the other.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, like I said, as a veg light, if it has a lot of blue, it's probably fine. You know, it's...
So when you... I just got a question. When you propagate in your soil,
uh-huh.
How do you... What do you do with this, like... Do you still do the paper towel method?
Well, with starting seeds, yes. But I put them on a heater now, on a heating pad in the grow tent. Uh-huh. So it has a very similar environment. Uh-huh. I put them also in my car for a day before so that they can experience winter. Some people put them in their fridge. I literally live in winter. There's snow outside. So that's fine. I just threw them in my car for like a half a day. Brought them back in, then warmed them back up and put them in the paper towel, because then you're making them think, okay, winter, spring, you know. Gotcha. Some people don't do that. That's just something I do now. I had a good result with it. I'm sticking to it.
Gotcha.
And then I'm using the Rapid Rooter plugs. They're a peat moss kind of little plug for starting clones. Why I like them is they have a little bit of micronutrients, a few macronutrients, but mostly little micronutrients that the starting seed and or clone really likes. So if you soak those in a very light nutrient solution that's pH to 5.4, or if you just soak it in water that's pH to 5.4, your choice, your seedling and your clone should do very well on those rapid rooters. At least I have a good experience with them.
Yeah, for people who might not be able to know how to balance their water, there's a chemical or something you could buy at the hydroponic stores.
Or on Amazon.
There's stuff on Amazon.
It's a pH up and down kit. That's what you'll want.
Yep, you could actually find it at the, probably in the pool section too, if you have a pool. A pool section or a pool store.
You might be able to find the tester for that. Whether you get your accuracy that you want will depend. But you should be able to find a tester in a pool section. And then to anybody that wants to adjust their pH, like let's say you did have a pH kit from Amazon. They're about $12 to $15. Let's say you did have a pH kit, right? And you ran out of pH down and pH up or whatever, you spilled the bottle and you're all out now, what do you do? Well, pH down, acid, you can just use a little bit of white vinegar. pH up, base, you can just use a little bit of baking soda. So you can adjust your nutrient solution with literally baking soda and white vinegar as long as you have a means to test your pH.
Yeah, another way to balance your water is also with a lemon.
Yep, there you go, yeah. I mean, anything acidic also, is going to help to bring it down.
Yeah, you could always use a lemon, put some lemon juice. Like, you just get a lemon, cut it, and squeeze a little juice into there, stir it up. it'll balance out your water pretty
good.
Yeah,
that'll bring it down.
It's a little home remedies, some home remedies for you.
Yep, that and then baking soda. If you overdo it, you can baking soda it back up.
Yep,
that works
cool.
Pretty well.
So you just put them in a paper towel, wet it, put it on a heater.
Put it somewhere warm and dark.
Gotcha. You keep it
dark.
Yeah,
in like a Tupperware container. And then they'll usually all sprout within 8 days or less. I mean, usually you'll see the first few in the first few days, but most of them will sprout within 8 days.
Then you put it into your plug, and then once your plug roots, you put it into the bag.
Yep. You put it in the plug. You can get a. I definitely suggest getting a clone dome. You can get some very small ones. There's literally like a set of three tiny ones for like $12, which comes with like clone tools, dome, and everything. It's on Amazon. The reason why I say
you could also
invest in a clone dome is just because it's so much easier to maintain a relative humidity. You know, if you spray the inside at the beginning with like a spray bottle, fill in 1/4 inch of water, that thing is going to be plenty humid for the entirety of its life cycle, pretty much. So,
he's 100% correct. I totally recommend these things.
Yeah. They're cloned. And like I said, you can get a very small scale one because you'll see a lot of expensive ones on Amazon as well. Keep looking. There's literally one or two brands that make these little small ones for like $12-$13. And they're perfect for, you know, small scale / beginners /
You could also find them in your local nursery or hardware store that might sell plants. Mm-hmm. You could also find these exact domes that he's talking about in those locations as well.
Yep, and then a heater, if you do live in a cold area, that is something that is great. They're literally a little heating mat. It's not necessary, however. If you have enough grow space in your grow environment, like your grow tent, your veg tent, wherever, you can, like, because that's actually why I like those mini clone domes. Because I can literally put them in with my veg tent, my 2x2 veg tent, it's not obnoxious. I can literally put 12, 24 clones in there and still have plants vegging. Not a problem.
Also kind of a ghetto way is to, you could use a solo cup, and to put a dome over it would be just a clear plastic cup also that you could get at a place. It's basically you're shutting out the outside air, keep on holding the air on the inside, and that'll create a warmer, more human environment for your
And then like I said at the beginning, you might want to use a spray bottle, but from the rest of that time, just evaporation should form water droplets on your plant. You don't want it to get too humid. Watch for mold. But at this point, before the plant actually roots itself, it actually gets all of its water from its grasses. So that's actually why having a humid environment, especially at the very beginning of cloning is a little less important with seed propagation, but it is still very important to be humid at the very beginning. So like I said, it's just, but you should be good.
Yep. Hey, so just a heads up, we might have to put the podcast on hold, or if you want to end in the next 10 minutes.
Yeah,
it's up to you.
We could end, and then like I said, we could do a more organized episode the next time. We could do something like tomorrow or something, or the next or whenever.
Yeah, we could definitely throw up a couple episodes. That'd be no problem. If not, like I said, I could edit a lot of this out if I wanted to, or just keep it in for just banter reasons. Doesn't matter. But I figured, because each episode's only an hour long max, but I didn't want to jump the gun. But I just wanted to let you know as a heads up. Don't worry, people. We're not going anywhere. So what would you say What's your main reason for doing it in dirt and not in hydroponics? What would you say your main reason is?
I mean, a lot of places that I've worked for has done the whole hydro thing, and I think it is fantastic for your the amount of control it gives you. But that being said, it also gives you a lot of potential of error. And with this soil mixture that I have established, as well as the beneficial bacteria and fungi, which you can use the beneficial bacteria and fungi in a hydro setup, like a rock wool setup, but it's not going to be as well utilized by the plant. And in this particular setup, it's very forgiving. If I were to forget to pH the water one day, which, I mean, I'm not going to do that, but I don't want to cause lockout on my plants. But even if I did somehow forget that, these bacterias and this soil chemistry and ecosystem should take care of it. It really does kind of take care of its own pH. I still monitor the soil pH, but the soil pH, it really does incredibly just kind of take care of itself. A lot of the micro and macronutrients are already available here. So the nutrient regimen that I am doing is pretty much all half dose of what the manufacturers recommend. Not only do I generally recommend doing that, is it just safe on your plants? A lot of manufacturers, they put pretty high recommendations on their bottles in order for you to use more of their product. So, yep. A lot of times at least go with a half, even a third dose at first and work your way up. But right now the plants are loving a half dose because with the soil, the nutrients that are already in the soil, they're thriving and they're not needing much more. So like I said, it's just, it promotes a lot less errors. And also the soil kind of holds water for a while. I found the cubes dry out a lot quicker, which some people like because they feel like they can give their plants more nutrients. But I kind of like it because I work. So I don't have to worry, okay, my plants, are they not going to make it if I work a 12-hour shift? You know, will make it. So.
Yeah. Well, that's great, man. A lot of people that I associate with, a lot of people that I talk to on the podcast, soil growers. Many of them actually have good soil naturally, from what I can tell. I mean, they're living they're not living in the middle of the desert, but we never know who's the people at the end, because there's some people in here from like Ireland that are unable to shop at like Amazon, mm-hmm. for say, or like some people in here from like Sri Lanka that's probably like a lot of desert area and shit, and they probably have shitty like in Tucson, shitty desert, and they need something to grow.
Well, and that's why really we should definitely do a super soil thing. I would love to, when I get a little bit more of my notes together, talk about how someone can make a super soil in their area and how they can make it beneficial for themselves.
Yeah, we'll try to pick that up in a couple of days and make that happen for the people so they could get a quick, maybe a half an hour podcast, something, so they could get a recipe or some type of notes that they could have in their book for that,
it would be less of a recipe and more of a what each ingredient does, so they can decide their own ingredients themselves. It's that type of thing. I think that's the best way to do it, because like you said, each area is going to have they're going to be easier to access certain things than others. So
cool, man. Fucking dude, it's so good.
Yeah,
to
you
talk
too,
to
man.
You, dude.
Yeah, hopefully I'll see you down here in Arizona sometime soon.
Yeah, dude. I can't wait, man. I got the people taking care of plants out there. I'm excited to see recreational hitting, and I'm ready to get the plants that I have out there into the market, and get this YouTube started for the people to have a visual resource to look at and to be able to see what I'm talking about.
That sounds fantastic. I have an indoor grow going already, so we can definitely.
Yeah, you were talking about doing a some live, like a Zoom meeting or something like that, like with the guests, so they could have a live Q&A. I think
that would be perfect. Just to have a more live format and get more questions going.
Yeah, I don't think they have that on YouTube, do they? It would have to be.
They do have
like
it on
Zoom.
YouTube. I noticed that the growers that I watched, the Grow Guys, they have a YouTube channel live going at the same time that they have a Zoom chat going.
Oh, all right. Yeah, the YouTube one is just a chat one. It's not a visual one.
I guess they have the Zoom so that they can video chat with each other, and then the YouTube, they do the YouTube live to, like, broadcast that or something like that. Something along
all
those
right,
lines.
All right. Yeah, because I threw it out on my Instagram, Growing Weed is for Dummies. If you guys ever want to reach out to me, go ahead and reach out to me on there about any questions you might have. Or if you just want to say hi, hit me up on the DM. But I put a little questionnaire, a little Q&A on there, and I asked people if they would be down to do that. And almost everybody that seen it said yes.
Very cool.
I figured, you know, now that I asked the peeps and the people said yes, I figured let's give it to them. And why not have you involved too, you know, since you kind of were the guy who sparked the plug
it. Like I said, yeah, I think it's a great idea. I realized myself going on to Amazon and looking at some of these books and stuff that I found one good book by Frank Spilotro, but the rest of the grow books that are on Amazon are absolute trash. And I mean trash. I mean, it's information that your grandma knows about cannabis. You know, it's did you know that THC can relieve pain? And it's like, what is this? I'm like,
we're going to make a kid's book on how to grow weed.
I mean, that would be better than any of the other ones on Amazon besides that Frank Spilotro one. So I have to give a shout out to him. Good job.
Yeah, that way me and you and all my people who listen could be able to, we have the pop-up books, you know, like it pops up and all of a sudden the plant pops up and the male plant smacks you in the face with its balls and you're like, this is a male, bitch, so you never ask me that question again. you get to see it. You open up the next page and it's a bud and she spreads her legs for you and it's a
dying,
beautiful...
So, that 3%.
All right, buddy. Well, we're hitting that marker anyways. It was good talking to you. I'll be up there soon. I wish I could stop by, but I'm going to have I'm going to have two cars come in with the crazy crowd, you know? So I probably won't be able to stop by on my way through, but I will be back up there, by the summertime to hopefully move up there.
That'd be sweet.
We could.
That would be sweet, man.
All right. Well, everybody, this was Dylan. Thanks for being on. And I appreciate it. We'll do this again in a couple of days and have part two of this soil conversation.
Cool. All right. And I guess anyone, if they want to follow me, they can follow me at DawgFaceGrass, DAWG FaceGrass at Instagram.
Yeah. Check them out. He's been posting some pictures. I think that's where I seen him at.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And reach out to him with any questions. I'm sure you probably have some. And if you do, it'd be appreciated. I love you guys. Thank you for being here. And I'll check you guys later.
All right. Bye, buddy.
See ya.